One time there was a care portal request that came in for TV. And there were some questions that came from some church responders on why the family was requesting a TV, because they didn't quite see how that was a vital need, you know, and typically the requests that come in are maybe urgent things.
Yeah, from the outside, someone might think that's not essential. Like, why would they ask for that when there's so many other needs that they probably have? But we take for granted that sense of normalcy. It's normal for a family to have a TV, and they need those rhythms. It might be rest. Every one of us has done it. We see one moment, one decision, one reaction, one messy situation. And without even meaning to, we start writing a whole story about someone. Maybe they're irresponsible. Maybe they don't care. Maybe they should have known better. Maybe they're just difficult. But what if there's more going on than what we can see? Hey everyone, I'm Johan, the producer of Neighborly. Today, Shannon and myself are stepping back from our regular guest interviews for another reflective episode. And we're talking about assumptions. The stories we tell ourselves about people before we really know them. And this isn't a conversation where we're the experts, where either of us are pretending we've figured this out. It's more of an honest look about how easily we fill in the blanks, and how neighborly care invites us to slow down, stay curious, and see the person right in front of us, not just the problem. Before we join Shannon at the table, we believe stories stick with us. They can change lives, and they can shift our perspective. That's a big part of what we're doing with this podcast as part of Care Impact's message. Neighborly is a Care Impact podcast produced in partnership with Care Creatives Company. Care Creatives helps organizations clarify their message through branding, design, websites, print, and audio production. All for social good. Hey, if you need any of that, check us out at carecreativesco.ca. All right, come join Shannon and I at the table for this conversation. Shannon, we're back at it.
We are. Woohoo.
Yeah, another one of those episodes where we get to step back from our regular interviews and just kind of reflect on some of the things that we've been hearing. What are we going to be talking about today?
Today, we are talking about assumptions and some of the stories that we tell ourselves about other people before we have a chance to know them. And as I was preparing for this and thinking about, just being honest, like ways I've done that before. And so I don't think either of us are coming at this from a place of like, we have it all figured out and everybody else is doing it wrong. I think we see over the years how we've learned in different ways. And now through the work we do, you know, we get to keep seeing that and providing some, hopefully some education and some opportunities for people to see the human in one another a little bit more than maybe jumping to a conclusion about someone.
Yeah, I think we all have our assumptions. And I assume the more you do care portal requests, a lot of those assumptions about people, they diminish over time even, right?
Absolutely.
Well, Shannon, let's just start off. What are some harmless assumptions people might think about you that aren't totally accurate? Because people have assumptions about all of us, right?
Yeah, one I've heard before is that people assume I'm always like extroverted and always energized by others. And I am to a point. Like I love talking to people. I love connecting. I love learning and understanding what makes someone who they are. And I can be, especially in places where I'm comfortable, I can be pretty carefree. But other people and group settings really only energize me to a point. And as soon as I hit that point, then people start to train me. And so I sometimes just need to go and have time and space on my own.
Yeah, I can really relate to that too. I'm kind of the same way where I need to recharge after. For me, I think people often assume that because I work in podcasting and they hear my voice online, I mean, YouTube, but and that I've been in leadership, I've done preaching and all these things, I must be great at talking to people. I must be great at meeting new people. But honestly, I feel like that's one of my biggest weaknesses. I do know how to turn it on, though, when I'm in a group. I can make people laugh. I can ask questions and get curious, which is probably the biggest first step to actually communicating with people, is asking good questions. But connecting personally with no agenda, that's where it gets really challenging, because I hate small talk as well. Like, I can interview someone for an hour because I've had a chance to prepare for that. And right. I've interviewed other people, right? But small talk in a lobby where you're just running into someone, or they approach you at church and you're in the lobby and want to start a conversation, and they start talking about the weather, I'm like, oh, another weather conversation. So why do you think people are so quick to fill in the blanks about others?
Yeah, I sat with this question for a long time, and I struggled to really even like make sense of why do we do this? But as it kind of went further, even in my own self, I think we, especially in today's world, we're not great at sitting or tolerating with uncomfortable feelings or uncomfortable situations. And we don't like unknowns. We want things to be pretty black and white or right and wrong. And so sitting with some complexity, I don't think is our default. And this might not be true for everybody, but I think sometimes I see, again, even just in myself, I tend to think kind of linear. Like I see something, a behavior or a situation, and my default is, well, there must be a clear reason for that, you know, because of XYZ, or they're acting this way, you know, just because of they're annoying or something, you know, this like clear cut point A to point B. And that's not usually the case.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Even as a podcast person, like that's one of the reasons why we're actually doing Neighborly is because we want to make those stories known so that there are less assumptions. And we want people to know there's always a story behind everyone's life, right? And the thing is, we like clean stories. We like things to make sense quickly, but real people almost never fit into those clean categories. Like, people are messy. And real life's not a podcast episode that I get to edit afterwards. People are not edited episodes. Mm-hmm. And I try to keep real to these stories when we do these interviews as well, to keep the real voice and keep the honesty.
But you can always remove some of my extra fillers, you know?
Yeah.
The people don't need to hear that. The number of times I say, can we start over? Oh.
Exactly. So if anyone was hesitant to be on the podcast, we can edit all that stuff out if you're afraid.
Don't worry.
Right? Yeah. And like you're saying, I think that's where assumptions can be so dangerous. For we see one scene from someone's life. It might be the first time we encounter them. Our brain starts to try to connect those dots, and we try to assume to understand the whole story. So why do assumptions happen so naturally? I mean, it's kind of like our previous question, but why is this so natural in us for us to have assumptions?
Yeah, that's a great question. We're all coming from our own perspectives and our perspectives on life, and that is always going to be shaped by our worldview and our life experiences. And a lot of it is learned behaviors that we've seen from the people around us and people growing up and all these different things. And that's just the point of view that we move through life. And I think most people aren't intending to maliciously make an assumption about others, but it can happen almost automatically. And so I think that's really the core of this, is not to shame anybody for having an assumption. I think what we're really trying to help people do in this episode is pause and learn how to pause when we're making those assumptions. And instead of jumping to a conclusion, be a little bit more aware of ourselves and where that assumption might be coming from a little bit preemptively.
Yeah, I think that's important. And you're right. I don't think most assumptions come from cruelty automatically.
Mm-hmm, right.
Sometimes they come from what someone has been taught in their home. Sometimes they come from what they've experienced. And quite often it comes from fear, just of the unknown, like you said earlier. And for me, sometimes they come from things we just really haven't took the time to think deeply about before. And that's something I've had to learn over the years. That doesn't make assumptions harmless, but it does mean that we need to be honest about how easily these stories can form inside of us. So I just mentioned where I noticed it in myself, where I just haven't had time to think deeply on a lot of these assumptions. Where do you notice it in yourself?
Yeah, I'll be a guinea pig and put myself out there. One I see in myself that I'm constantly trying to work on and be aware of is when I'm out and about in public and I see parents and kids interacting. And one example might be, you know, I'm at the grocery store or a restaurant and I see a parent respond to their child a certain way and think, ooh, like that's not what I would do if I were a parent, you know, thinking I have all this experience and I must know better. Or, you know, even if I'm just interacting with someone and I might kind of put a label on them as like being a little bit more difficult to work with or talk with, and just assuming that's who they are. Like they're demanding or they're annoying or, you know, this is kind of the internal dialogue. And I say that not because I am proud of that by any means, but I'm trying to notice and be self-aware in myself of that's where my kind of internal judgment starts to go. And those can be assumptions that I can make quickly without considering, oh, maybe that family's having a really hard day and that mom is doing the very best she can and that kid just did that thing again that she told them not to do. Or, you know, I'm with a person and they just had a phone call from a family member and they are really struggling. Like, I don't know. But at the same time, that's where we can start to think of ourselves and just be like, oh, I'm justified and I would do it differently or I would do it better. And yet we just don't, we don't know. We don't know what's right underneath the surface.
Yeah, that reminds me when I used to work as an EA many, many years ago. There were times sitting in the staff room with the other staff where they'd talk about the students. There'd be a student that misbehaves on a regular basis or they'd act out. The staff would just assume like they don't care, that they're lazy, that they weren't raised well. I've actually heard them say, and this is heartbreaking when I've heard it, that that student is a waste of space.
Wow.
And my heart just broke when I heard that, just knowing, like from my Christian perspective, that they are God's image bearers.
Yeah.
And the more I sat in the context, working with these students, asking them questions about their life, I mean, they don't often share much anyway, but I've heard about some of these students whose siblings went missing, or if they've witnessed violence in their home, or they had to protect their mom from her new boyfriend.
Yeah.
Stuff like that, that they're dealing with, that we just can't understand that context. Like, we've never been in a lot of that context.
Yeah.
So from the outside, the behaviors look like defiance and laziness, but underneath there's like fear, there's trauma, frustration, shame, exhaustion. So a student not doing homework might look like laziness from the outside, but there's a real story of fear and trauma, like I was saying. And a learning disability sometimes where they're just, they really do care so much, but they have trouble reading. So it becomes really frustrating and they act out behaviorally. Those are some of those assumptions that even caregivers, those in authority, like teachers, they have assumptions about students sometimes. I'm not painting everybody with this broad stroke, but there's some out there that are caring for these kids that just don't take the time to understand. So Shannon, where do you see this show up in churches and neighborhoods and community care, especially working with Care Portal?
Yeah. Something I've noticed in these environments, and this is often just under the surface a little bit, it's not something we'd maybe say outright, is that we, the collective we, the church, the community, the neighborhood, can often assume what people need. And again, going back to what you're saying in the beginning, this isn't malicious, but it's sometimes just our default. And especially like me, if you're a helper, you want to fix things, you want to right wrongs, you can quickly jump into like, oh, well, I know what that family probably needs. An example of this is one time there was a Care Portal request that came in, and the request was for a TV. And there were some questions that came from some church responders on why the family was requesting a TV, because they didn't quite see how that was a vital need, you know, and typically the requests that come in are maybe urgent things. And what they didn't know was that that family was needing a smart TV because it was going to have multiple purposes. One of their kids was going to be able to do some schoolwork using that TV, and it could then also be used for other things. Yeah, and so when we see that request come in, we don't necessarily know the whole story. Another common one I can see show up in conversations with community and just in friendships even is how people view homelessness. And sometimes the narrative is often, well, why don't they just go get a job? And from the outside, that's really, really easy to say. And I think for me, coming from a place of not experiencing poverty and not experiencing major hardship in my life, I kind of used to think that way too, of like, well, you know, if you're able to stand outside with a sign, like why not just spend that time, you know, looking for a job? And I'm so glad that over the years, God has humbled me and I've kept my heart soft to remain curious and compassionate, because obviously now, as I've been in this space a little bit and asked some more questions, there's so much beyond the person standing on the corner that I don't see. I don't know if they're battling active addiction or untreated mental illness, or they lack access to, you know, shower facilities or transportation to get to a job interview. There's so many factors that it is not as simple as just going and getting a job. And it can really oversimplify what people are navigating. Yeah, so that's one example where I've seen in my own self learning and really wanting to help communities and churches look at themselves in that way as well. And again, not to shame anybody, but to help open our eyes to a different perspective.
Yeah, I've heard that phrase before too. Like, why don't they just get a job? And that's one of those clean story assumptions, right? It gives a simple explanation, but it skips over so much complexity. And I think sometimes those simple explanations make suffering feel more manageable from a distance. Like, we have the answers. If they just got a job, like, that, it's simple. And they give us no reason not to wrestle with those harder questions. And again, for me, it's thinking deeper on these things. But real care, as we've learned, really begins when we're willing to sit with that complexity, when we're willing to sit with that curiosity. The TV example that you gave, that's a great example, because from the outside, someone might think that's not essential. Like, why would they ask for that when there's so many other needs that they probably have? But we take for granted that sense of normalcy. It's normal for a family to have a TV, and they need those rhythms. It might be rest. It might be a time for a parent to connect with their child and have that connection time where their child's not distracted by something else or behaviors. Mm-hmm. They can just sit together and in quiet. It might be creating that sense of home, because that's a normal thing to have in your home. This doesn't mean every request is simple, obviously, and it doesn't mean we can't ask wise questions. But neighborly care starts from curiosity, not suspicion. So I think we all just need to be more curious. Okay, let's shift the conversation a little bit and talk about the damage of assumptions. So if assumptions are often automatic, and if we all do this in different ways, and maybe the next question is, what damage do assumptions actually do? Because I think assumptions create distance. We don't get closer to people because we have assumptions about them. They can reduce people to their worst moment, reduce them to their need, their behavior, or financial situation. We can reduce them to their parenting stress or whatever visible struggle we happen to see. But Shannon, how can assumptions keep us from seeing the person in front of us?
I think you said it right there. We can see one moment and start to make this whole story in our head. And then we end up missing the whole person that's standing right in front of us, and start to maybe put a label on someone and start to define them by that one moment rather than really seeing them for the whole person that they are.
Yeah, because we all have bad moments. And if that's our first impression or our only impression someone gets of us, we walk away just cringing. It's like, oh my goodness, that's what I put forward for this person. Mm-hmm. Some of these people live with that more often because of their situations. And that must be heart-wrenching for them to live with that on a daily basis sometimes, because there's so much more to them, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that makes me think about something smaller, but still real. People sometimes assume that I'm disengaged because I'm, when there's more than two people in a room and there's conversations, I'm usually the quiet one, believe it or not. even at home, my wife has experienced this too. She'll ask me a question and then there will just be silence and it drives her crazy. The truth is, I'm not listening. I'm usually processing because I, you know, biblically, you want to be slow to speak.
right.
But I tend to need time to digest what people are saying, mostly because I don't like the taste of my foot in my mouth.
Yeah.
But it's a small example of how easily we can misread people. We can misread silence. We can misread behavior, or we can misread tone. We can misread the struggle or the day that they're having. Mm-hmm. When we're at a grocery store and the teller's not smiling and grouchy, we can say, wow, they're really bad at customer service. Maybe they're just having a bad day.
Yeah.
And once that label gets attached, it can be a lot harder for us to see a person clearly, especially if that's our first impression of them.
Right.
So how does curiosity protect dignity?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it protects dignity because curiosity helps us resist the urge to make somebody simple. And most people are carrying grief, pressure, history, often fear, even trauma. And these are all kinds of things that we can't immediately see. And curiosity also reminds me that my own perspective is limited. I might have an interpretation of someone's behavior, but that interpretation is definitely not the whole truth. And I think there's just something deeply dignifying about really listening. And curiosity helps tell someone, I want to know you. And there is safety really here to be yourself. And I think when someone feels safe and you can be trusted with whatever it is they want to say, that's really where someone feels dignified.
That's good. And if you know me, I like to bring in scripture into these conversations.
Yeah.
Because as it says in Timothy, scripture is profitable for teaching, reproof, correction, and for training in righteousness. And obviously, Jesus is such a beautiful example of what we're talking about today.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we see so clearly in his life is that he consistently saw people beneath the labels, beyond their labels, that others have placed on them. We see it, the woman at the well. And specifically, I'm thinking right now, I don't need to go into a sermon here, but the story of Zacchaeus, he really fits into that conversation. Everyone already decided who Zacchaeus was. He was a tax collector. He was corrupt. He was compromised. He was not the guy people wanted Jesus spending time with. I'm pretty sure they tried to counsel him against it. Why?
Yeah.
Like, let's maybe not talk to this person. Can we just move it over here? So Shannon, when you think about Zacchaeus, what stands out to you about the way Jesus treats him?
Yeah. Well, like you said, tax collectors in those days were not at all viewed highly. Well, I don't think we still like paying taxes.
That's true.
But especially in those days, they were corrupt, like you said, and would often take more than the tax somebody owed and just keep that for themselves. And so, you know, I think if I were, you know, one of the people who were viewing Zacchaeus this way, like I'd feel pretty righteous in my anger towards this man. And yet, Jesus not only noticed Zacchaeus, but he moved towards him. And he said, I'm going to stay at your house. And that just doesn't make sense. Zacchaeus treated people unjustly. He was what we'd call a bad guy or, you know, a sinner.
I would probably be offended, actually.
Yeah. And so culture would say, like, he's not who you want to hang out with. Like, we need to call him out and chastise him because he's been doing wrong.
And like you said, he's a tax collector. So to be fair, some of that story was probably based on real harm where he actually did harm to people by collecting taxes when it probably wasn't justified. He'd probably taken advantage of people. He probably benefited from this unjust system. And we feel like we're all righteous when we stand up against these things. But this isn't about pretending none of that mattered.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus didn't excuse what Zacchaeus had done. And he also didn't reduce what he had done.
Mm-hmm.
But the crowd saw that label and Jesus saw the person. And being seen differently opened the door to living differently.
Right.
Jesus didn't ignore the truth again, but he saw more than one piece of it.
Yeah.
Those assumptions that we have coming in.
Mm-hmm. When I was reading this short passage of Zacchaeus before today, it kind of just struck me again. And this is a story that I've been singing the Zacchaeus song since I was a little kid. And yet, this is what Jesus says. He says, today salvation has come to this house because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. And even in all of the harm that Zacchaeus had done, Jesus didn't see that as the end of the story. Yesterday, I saw a video. It reminds me of this, and it stopped me in my tracks. I'll probably cry as I tell this story again, but it was a video of a young woman. Her name is Shelby Brown, and in the video, she was speaking to inmates in a prison, and she shares this story that her dad was a police officer, and when she was 18, He responded to a call and he was shot 4 times and he passed away. She shares that in the pain and the brokenness, she felt the Lord was prompting her to make a decision. And this is what she felt like the Lord said. I felt like he said, Shelby, close your eyes. I want you to picture the face of Jesus. What did his eyes look like on the cross? And for me, she says, they were looking straight at me, filled with tears. And I felt like he said, Shelby, I did this for you. But do you know who I also did this for? I did this for the man who shot your father.
Wow.
And she goes on to talk about how she chose to forgive the man that killed her dad. And now she brings the hope and the redemption of Jesus to men and women in prison. And I can't stop thinking about that, because where we see labels, where we see a grumpy neighbor or a tax collector or even a murderer, Jesus still sees a person. And that does not excuse the behavior. It does not say that it was okay. Jesus says it's still not too much for his mercy and his grace.
That's really good. So we need to wrap up pretty soon here. So this is where we need to get a bit more practical. How do we actually move from judgment, these assumptions, into curiosity? Because curiosity doesn't mean that we throw wisdom out the window. I like the quote, don't be so open-minded that your brains fall out.
Yeah.
It means that we refuse to reduce a person to what we actually see in that moment. Like I mentioned before, I would say an unhelpful version of this would be, don't judge anyone, everything is fine. But I think a better version of that is, use wisdom, keep healthy boundaries, and don't let your first assumptions become your final answer. So, Shannon, how do we stay compassionate without ignoring harm?
Yeah. Well, I think it's important to say this. We are talking about pausing and being curious before we make assumptions. And that's not the same thing as excusing harmful behavior, just like I talked about in that last story. Accountability still matters. Using wisdom still matters. But staying compassionate can look like acknowledging that there's more we don't see, whether that's instability or fear or trauma. And that can help us to understand someone's behavior without excusing it, while still wanting to know the human underneath the surface. I think multiple things can be true at the same time.
Yeah, I think curiosity doesn't mean pretending that harm is okay. It means refusing to let harm become the only thing that we believe about a person.
Yeah.
So right. Even sitting with a story and showing that you're understanding someone's story doesn't mean that we're justifying everything mm-hmm. that they do. It just yeah. means that we're starting to understand.
Yeah.
So we're going to transition to the end here. So maybe a practical invitation this week. We'll keep it simple. So when we notice ourselves making these assumptions about people when we encounter them, here's 3 questions I think that we can ask ourselves. I'm sure there's more, but these are just 3 that we've thought of. First of all, what story am I telling myself? 2, what might I not know? And lastly, what would dignity require here? And that might mean asking a better question. It might mean offering patience. It might mean learning someone's name. It might mean softening our tone. It might mean praying for the person. It might mean choosing not to repeat the assumption as gossip.
Yeah.
And it might mean moving closer with wisdom instead of pulling away in judgment. Because again, being curious actually brings us closer to people and it breaks that distance that we have. Shannon, you have any final thoughts before we close out this episode?
Yeah, I think all of what you just shared is really what it means to be neighborly. You know, not pretending that we know the whole story, but still staying curious enough to just see the person in front of us. And again, we say this, I think, hopefully we've said this before, but care doesn't have to be perfect. We don't have to get it all right. Sometimes I've plenty of times, you know, connect with somebody and I'm trying to say something that I think is smart or wise. But at the end of the day, it just means being present and listening and caring about someone and caring about who they are underneath the surface beyond what we just see on the outside. And I think that is really what can help us look a lot more like Jesus when we move towards those who people tend to move away from, and when we ask the questions instead of staying off at a distance. That's what it really means to be a good neighbor.
And hey, listeners, we'd love to hear any stories. If you've gone from judgment into curiosity, if you've been able to make that transition and have some specific stories to tell, because those are great stories to share on this platform. So reach out to us, podcast@careimpact.ca. We'll see you next time.
The stories we share here remind us that care does not have to be perfect to be powerful. It just has to be present. Neighborly is an initiative of Care Impact, a Canadian charity equipping churches, agencies, and communities with technology and training to care better together. This episode was produced by Care Creatives Company, a social enterprise of Care Impact. If you're building a podcast and want help with strategy, editing, or full production, visit carecreativesco.ca to connect with us. I'm Johan. Thanks for listening. And be that kind of neighbor someone will never forget, in a good way. Sister, take my hand. When I see you in a stranger